stop persistence as our history is real. A strong will can shine like gold.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. This is Wayne Bennett. This is episode 78, and we've got Dan Bailey back with us. We didn't get to finish our discussion, Dan, glad to have you, bud.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Now, we talked about you teaching guitar. I once heard a quote from you that said, to make a living as a musician in Beckley, you have to be very creative.
Well, this is true. I mean, and I think that's true with anybody that's involved in the arts. If you're an artist in West Virginia, or real pretty much period, you just don't go somewhere and get a job, you know. You have something that you create, something that you do, and you kind of have to make your own space, your own thing. By the way, I wanted to add that so you have this theme by Matt Mullins and the group, right?
Yes.
Well, I taught Matt and Stuart Hill, who's the guitar player, both when they were kids.
Really?
Now, I can't be responsible for Stuart's whole playing because he's a great guitar
Stuart's
player.
Stuart's tough.
But I did Stuart. I used to drive up from Pineville every Saturday, and I taught at the mall, at the Pied Piper at the mall. And he would drive up, and we'd have a guitar lesson, and you know, after a while, you say, this kid's interested. He's really coming along. He's doing great.
Oh, yeah.
And then I didn't hear about him for a long time. And it's kind of like I turned around and he'd gotten really good, you know.
Yeah. Well, you had I can remember when you were teaching lessons, you'd have little ads and classified ads of the newspaper. And once I read a quote where you kind of preferred groups in some ways because they didn't feel as much pressure on them when there was three or four.
Well, that's true too. That's true. What you don't get in a group is the personal, you know, attention. And if a teacher loves a group, probably the biggest reason because you get paid better.
Yeah.
You make more money.
Yeah.
Right? Putting your attention on one person is.
You had one prodigy, too, David Shrewsbury.
David Shrewsbury.
And David went to the junior high that I taught at, he was a big old tall kid, and everybody tried to get him to play basketball.
Yeah.
He didn't play basketball, but he could play every musical instrument.
David, I don't throw the term prodigy around very much. Because, I mean, you know, a prodigy is kind of a rare thing. But I think David was. And what I would call a musical prodigy is someone who has a conceptual understanding of music at a very early age. And that's what he had.
Uh-huh.
And he was, you know, he took guitar lessons from me after he'd been playing the keyboard for quite a while. And he's like, he's soloing and improvising over jazz tunes after about 4 months, which people spend years learning to do that, you know. So he knew what he was supposed to do as a musician. He understood how music worked. And so that's the deal.
When he was in junior high, I mean, anytime we had a show or a program, he was playing usually keyboards and stuff at that time. But he ended up going to Berkeley too, didn't he?
I think David graduated and he's in Boston now. I still am in touch with David, and I use him in my studio. I've got a recording studio in my house. It's a Pro Tools HD studio. And David does keyboard tracks, both piano and organ, and sends them to me. I'll send him up a song that I need, you know, that's got the basic form with drums and bass or whatever going on. And I'll say, put, you know, a piano track or put an organ track to this.
Wow.
And he will do it and send it back to me.
I was watching NBC today one morning, and you know how they get the crowd outside and they're talking and everything. And they said, we got this guy here from Berklee School of Music, and he had a saxophone. And it was Dave Shrewsbury.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, this has been several years ago.
Yeah, well, Dave played sax too.
And I recognized him immediately. And then he told him, he said, well, I'm from Berklee, West Virginia. And he played sax right there on NBC. And I said, man, I hope somebody kept a copy of that, because that thing was, it was really neat. And he was probably just in his early 20s or something then. I don't know. He wasn't very old.
He was a pretty good sax player, I remember back then. And he played guitar. Of course, keyboards are his thing. And he's great at that.
But you've played in talent shows, minstrels, weddings, dramas, every kind of production you can imagine. How about Nashville? Tell us a little bit about Nashville.
Nashville is a tough nut to crack. You got to have your act together to go down there. You got to know what's going on. We went with TaylorMade. Greg and Brian and Wendy Duckworth. Williams at the time.
Yeah.
I can't think of her name right now. She's remarried. But anyhow, we got a group. We won a talent contest here. We were called I-79 because we just had to come up with a name. And they took I-79 up to where they lived. So that's what we became. And then they were from Taylor County. And Dale Morris in Nashville decided that we should change the name to TaylorMade, which we did. Dale Morris managed Kenny Chesney in Alabama for their careers, and he's a well-known guy in Nashville.
Yeah.
So we had him kind of pitching for us there for a while, but yeah, it's hard. You go down there and you can spend a lot of money. Anybody trying to buy their way into Nashville, they will take everything you've got and ask for more. So you have to be careful how you spend your money and who's going to help you and what's thing. We did pretty well. We did pretty well and had a lot of fun. I flew around the country, ate some good food, and stayed some nice places and met a lot of people. But finally, in the end, you know, you're competing with these older folks, with all these young people. When we started out, you've got Taylor Swift was in country music then, and you got the band Perry, and you're competing against all these real attractive young people, you know, and they were a little older when they started out, TaylorMade was.
Yeah.
So, It's tough, but kind of a funny story. We went down to Nashville. I had the three Duckworths and myself went, and we were going to audition for some people. So Dale Morris got us lined up, and we played for Paul Worley, who was with, I think it was Warner Brothers, and he liked us and wanted to sign us right on the spot. It was the first time that we had tried to play for somebody. We auditioned for him. And Dale Morris, I remember, said, we're not going to take the first offer we get. We're going to take the best offer we get. Well, what happens if the first offer you get is the only offer you get? Then what happens? So anyhow, Paul Worley went on to produce Lady, what are they called?
Lady Antebellum.
Which was two guys and a girl, which was exactly what we had.
Well, they were kind of put together. I mean,
that's the guy that did it, and that's the guy that wanted to sign TaylorMade.
Wow. Yeah,
you know, before then. Anyhow, you know, we went and recorded and you know, you just throw stuff. You throw stuff against the wall and hope it'll stick, you know, and you get out there and you promote. There were several bus tours that I would travel with them through the South. And we'd visit radio stations, go in with either a box of donuts or a pizza and and talk to the folks and try to get them to play the records, you know.
But, I remember you guys opened up at the State Fair for Sugar Land.
Yeah.
I love Jennifer Nettles.
Yeah.
We were there. We Diane, my wife, never was much of a country fan, and I was.
Yeah.
And we were at the fair, and we were walking around. I said, man, Sugar Land's playing tonight, and Taylor Made's playing before them. I said, we ought to go to that. And she kind of hem-hauled around. Finally, we went, and she became a country fan after that. Around 98, you opened up Cornerstone Music with Doug Harper.
Doug Harper, right.
And they primarily were doing lessons and selling music equipment.
Yeah.
Do you still have Cornerstone? I know Doug has passed
away. No, I haven't. We sold we got out of the business and sold the store a number of years ago now.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of students. I was teaching like probably close to 60 students a week, I guess, at the time. Each one privately, and I thought, well, you know, let's just have this store, and they'll all come in, and we can just have a store and sell stuff, and we'll be fine. But you know, if you're going to have a retail business, you got to mind the business, so to speak. So I never had a lot of interest really in having a store as such. I just wanted to teach and play and do my thing. So. We did okay. We survived for a while, but over a long period of time, you know, your expenses build up. So finally, we decided that the best thing to do was just to sell it and get out of there.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, now you can play in several different groups. And I mean, you've had bands that you've played in the group Peddler. I think Pete Peterson might have been in that group.
Right? Not Peddler was actually... Kenny Weir, who died, was the main guy in that group, and he had played with Exile in Kentucky, you know, the rock group, and so we had a good run around here and played, and then I think we kept that Peddler name, and there was another group that we had for quite a while around here. I remember Ted Clements from over in Princeton area. He's African-American guy, and I have the distinction of playing the band with the first African-American guy to play in the Moose Club in Beckley, I think.
So. I've read somewhere that you, of all the genres of music that you've played, you kind of had a little lean toward blues and jazz.
Yeah, that's what I like.
And you actually had the Dan Bailey jazz band.
I've put together jazz groups and played in jazz groups for a while. It's a challenging form of music, and it's interesting once you've been playing for years, you know, a lot of the rock stuff. The thing that's always appealed to me in music are just the harmonies, the lush chords, just the beauty of things like that. And some of the rock ballads and pop ballads, of course, contain some of that, but the standards are just full of those kinds of sounds. And it's fun to play jazz. When we talk about jazz, we're talking about playing standards, which are songs, The Shadow of Your Smile, Wave, All the Things You Are. These are old songs that have become part of the American songbook, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
So jazz musicians get together and they all know these songs in the same key, and you can all get together and you're speaking the same, you know, language. You can play with each other.
Wow.
So it's a great thing.
And you got, a few years ago, you got hooked up with Doris Fields. And
Lady D.
Lady D.
And I still play with her. I played with her Thursday night in Lewisburg and Saturday in Clarksburg.
I've seen her a few times, and she did a Bessie Smith rendition, and
she does a one woman show. Bessie Smith,
and great job she does. And do you think the Southern West Virginia is open to jazz? I mean, is there a market out there, or?
Not generally, I don't think so. But, you know, it depends on where you go and the people. Certain areas and certain towns are open to it. Probably Lewisburg is the most fun town to play in.
Yeah.
Because people come out for you. I've told everybody for years that when I first came back to Beckley, I was playing with a group, and then we went to Lewisburg and played something up there. I forget what it was. And I just played a guitar solo, and afterwards I heard this sound that I'd never experienced before. People were applauding. People were actually listening, and they were like loving it, you know, and they listened to the music. So, you know, I think maybe it's changing a little bit, but a lot of people just, if you're playing something that they haven't heard on the radio or something that they haven't heard online, then it's not real music to them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a shame, you know, that it has to be that way.
Yeah.
But that seems to be the case.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of times you'll hear a band playing some type of cover music, and then they'll throw in a couple originals, and they're like, what's that?
well, they don't have a frame of reference. So if they don't have anybody telling them that that's good or bad.
Yeah.
They have to judge it solely on the merits of the music that they're hearing at the time, and they're kind of lost.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. That's it. You've been in music for 60-plus years. What's some of the biggest improvements or changes that you've seen over the years? I mean, something that...
Well,
as far as equipment or...
Well, the electronics and, of course, but, you know, people have been building guitars now for a long time. And I started playing in the fairly early 60s. And a lot of those people, you know, at the time, I remember thinking that, well, when people get 30 years old, they just have to kind of quit this because they're too old. And now you've got people in the 70s, 80s even out to touring and playing, you know. But the thing that keeps people going, I think, is, of course, the love for music. But as far as changes, you know, the digital stuff has really created a lot of change. Everything that you need to play on stage and hear and be comfortable now is available electronically as far as the monitors and the equipment and the sound reinforcement. It's all very good. And if somebody knows what they're doing, you can just sail on stage and feel really comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you never saw bands before. Usually if a band played, they would come out to four guys, five people, and they play, but now you got sound people, lights people, all that.
Yeah, yeah. They were PAs back then, way back, but they weren't what they are now.
Yeah.
And you know, most everybody, I mean, for many, many years, you know, when you went on stage, you had to have an amplifier that was loud enough to cover the whole thing. Now, probably the biggest change is take a little amplifier as a guitar player. And then the sound guys will put a mic on it, and they're responsible for getting the big sound out there.
Yeah. So now you got Elm Ridge Productions.
Yeah, that's my studio at the house.
What keeps you busy there?
Well, like yesterday, I recorded a piece for the West Virginia Dance Company. Tanita Akers Toller. Her son Holden came over and they recorded a piece that will be used to perform with the dance company. Ron Soule, who's the musical director of Mountain Stage, has kept me pretty busy lately. I'm currently doing a song with him, and I'll see him probably tomorrow. He's coming up. John Switzer, a local guy, has done quite a bit of recording lately. Ashley Lilly, one of Lilly's, she's Everett Sr.'s granddaughter.
Okay.
Who died. Everett died a few years ago now. And she lives in California, but she'll send me rough ideas, and then I create the tracks, music tracks, and we're corresponding back and forth long distance on that. Various things, just running all kinds of stuff. Like lately I've done two things for girls that are good singers and they're getting married. And they want to sing a song to be played at the wedding. And it's always a surprise. In both cases, it's been a surprise to the groom and his family. And all of a sudden, you've got her walking down the aisle, and she's singing this song that's done in the studio, produced, And it's kind of a sweet thing.
Speaking of singing, I know you've done a lot of backup singing. Have you ever been a lead singer? No, ever tried it?
Not really. And there's kind of a funny story. A few years ago, before I started doing my own studio stuff, I was recording in Oak Hill at Doug Gents quite a bit, and I was doing jingles. And Doug was working with Charles Ryan Advertising in Charleston, and I had written, so they wanted a commercial for this onion. It was called Oh So Sweet. It was a Peruvian onion that was sold at certain times of the year, kind of like a Vidalia, which you don't see it much anymore. So it was to the tune of Ain't She Sweet. They wanted that, Ain't She Sweet, from her head down. Okay. So they wanted that kind of changed around for Oh So Sweet. So anyhow, I had done a jingle, and so we got on a three-way conference call there, and they said they wanted to hear it. So I played the track that I had, and I sang along with it, just to give them an idea. I said, so that's how it sounds, and, we'll get somebody to sing it. There was a long pause. They said, well, play it again. So I played it again, and I sang along with it. And I said, we'll get somebody to sing it, and that's the way it's going to work. A long pause. They said, we want you to sing it. I said, what? You want me to sing it? So actually, as recent as 5 or 6 years ago, I had a friend that said he had heard that commercial played in Charleston of me singing that song. So that is the extent of my singing. Let's just
onion commercial. That's great. Well, Dan, I appreciate you coming by, and I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I've really enjoyed over the years watching you and hearing you perform.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And look forward to hearing you some more.
Well, I hope somebody will enjoy or find some value in all this, and I appreciate what you're doing, Wayne. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it. Anybody else out there, again, we remind you, if you want to be on the show, you can contact me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet, and God bless you.
Hit the bottom but never made a sound. It's a quiet kind of crazy. She keeps it all inside. It's a broken heart that just won't let her be. Between the PTA and baseball games, she finds a place. It's a quiet kind of crazy.